Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Good afternoon, everybody, and it is finally a happy Monday for Happy Valley here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Matt Catrillo here with you in the producer chair. Steve will soon be there from the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 1115 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. And every Monday show brought to you by our good friends at Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com for all of your insurance needs, home, auto, life, business, all that good stuff. Visit them online at purdyinsurance.com. And just a tremendous football weekend, really, for the Valley in general. Penn State gets the W. Southern Columbia football wins their 11th state title, fourth straight, 11th overall. And Jim Roth, the head coach, is now the winningest head coach in Pennsylvania history at 356, passing George Curry with the win Saturday morning against Wilmington. And he's going to join us at 335 today, so a little local flavor. We also have Mark Wolkenrich at 406, and then we have Jerry Dulac at 435. But back to Penn State and what that win was against Michigan. Obviously, if you're going to win very few games this year, it's always good to have Michigan as one of them. And the significance of it, I think, will also speak out and is a big helper to sort of ease the pain a little bit of what's been a tough year for Penn State, I would think, Steve.
My apologies. I thought you were going to play the highlight package. So, sorry about that.
Yes, I don't have that. I'm sorry.
Okay. So, great to be here. So, let's start. There'll be a couple things I want to get into today. One of them is obviously Penn State. Then we'll talk about the Crosscutters in a moment, because Crosscutters baseball is going to continue. We'll explain how in just a few moments. But Penn State, I think the important part that I want to start with Penn State is everybody. You can talk about what they did. They did this. They did that. But I want to start with what they didn't do. What didn't they do on Saturday? They didn't turn the ball over. It's amazing that when you take care of the ball and you play with the lead, it just makes a huge difference in what you're trying to do out there. I mean, a huge difference. There's a different mentality to playing with the lead. There's a different mentality in not just playing with the lead, but it's just an attitude about it. And Penn State on Saturday, except for a 7-7 tie, played with the lead the entire day. They scored in the opening drive of the game. It's the second time this season they've done that. The other one was in Indiana. By the way, it was Michael Penix tore his ACL. I feel awful for him. He's out for the year. He is really he's the fulcrum for that team. And every time Penn State was challenged in the game, they responded. So Michigan ties the game at 7. Penn State then goes in front 14-7. They get the Drew Hartlob fumble recovery on the punt. They turn that into 3. Then in the second half, when Michigan got the ball Started the second half, got a field goal. Penn State then responded and got a field goal of its own. Then when Michigan scored a touchdown, finally, Penn State on the ensuing drive got the touchdown right back. And again, you're back to a two-score lead. Now, you're the team playing with the two-score lead. That means so much in the dynamic of the game. In other words, by doing that, Michigan did not have the ball with a chance to take the lead because Penn State kept going back to a two-score lead. It's 17-10. Right? Michigan gets a field goal. Great. But now it's 20-10. It's back to a two-score lead. Michigan's got the ball again, but they're down two scores. Next part, right, is that you sit there and in this two-score lead, Michigan then gets it back down again. Now it's 20-17. You immediately in the ensuing drive make it two scores again, 27-17. And then let's get to the ability to close the game. Last year, Penn State did a great job of closing out a win at Iowa with a couple of first downs with the offensive line and Noah Kane. Last year against Michigan, Penn State closed the game with a key first down with K.J. Hamler running the ball. Well, Saturday, they closed the game, and they did it long-term. Penn State took over with 5:37 to go in the game and never gave the ball up. Penn State in the game was 5 of 7 on third down in less than 4. We've talked about short yardage before. I've graphically explained that Penn State needed to be better in short yardage. I've done it with stats. And Penn State was 5 of 7 on third in less than 4. Conversely, Michigan was 2 of 7 on third down in less than 4. And then, of course, Penn State had the 2 fourth-down stops. Michigan was 1 of 3 on fourth down. Penn State's short yardage defense came up big. I thought Jaquan Brisker played his best game. I thought Ellis Brooks played pretty well on Saturday. Akeem Beeman played well again. I thought Brandon Smith is every game Brandon Smith gets a little bit better. There's really only two plays in that game where I sat back and went, oh, man. And that was, of course, one is obvious. It's the Haskins 60-yard run that set up the first Michigan touchdown. I mean, it was a big hole, and angles were all wrong and everything. And the other one was just a great play by Michigan. Just a great play by Michigan. That's the pass to A.J. Henning, which was really well covered, and the pass was right there. And Henning, on a 50-50 ball, went up and got the thing. It was just a great play by him, the 28-yard play. Other than that, they kept the ball in front of them the entire time. As for the batted ball, I don't really know what to tell you about that. Because the way Jack and I looked at it was a couple ways. One was Shaka Toney batted the ball, and he batted it either slightly back or perpendicular. He did not bat the ball forward, which I thought, and Jack agreed, was the standard. That in order for that to be a hey-hoo-hoo, you can't hit it forward. We thought he batted it either perpendicular or slightly back because he's just swiping at it to hit it. Then, of course, it went to Jason Owe and whatever. Then I thought, well, if it's illegally batting the ball, they'll just put the ball at the spot where the ball was batted. The last thing I expected was a 10-yard penalty from the previous line of scrimmage. I never expected that. Never. I said, look at each other, really? So think about this play. Let's just think about the play for a moment. One team, Michigan. I'm going to put a series of boxes up of everything you can do wrong in a play. Offensive line gives up penetration. Check. Quarterback rolls away, tries to get away, and doesn't throw the ball away. Check. Quarterback gets hit, fumbles the ball. Check. Opposing team hustles its brains out and gets to the ball, bats it back in. Opposing team recovers it. Michigan does everything on the play wrong that you can possibly do and gets a first down. Huh? The other team does everything right. The other team gets penetration. The other team chases him down. The other team hits him from behind and causes the fumble. The other team hustles its brains out to get to the ball and saves it, and then, boom, recovers the ball, and they get nothing. The other team gets 10 yards on the first down. I don't get the logic of the call. I've never done a game where that's happened before. I've never done a game with a batted ball like that before. Never. Now, I was told by somebody, I don't know if you were watching the game or not, Matt, I was told by somebody that whomever the official was they were working with, I don't know if it's Dave Cataya or Bill Lemagne, whomever, said that they got it wrong. I don't know if they got it wrong or not. I don't know.
I did see the game. I did see the play. And I thought it was the... It's a bad rule, but it was a good call. Because I actually... Ben Jones, statecollege.com, put this out perfectly. He highlighted the part where it says, clearly no player shall bat other loose balls forward in the field of play. But
he didn't bat it forward. See, that's
right.
The issue I've got. He didn't bat the ball forward. If he had batted it forward, I'd sat back, well, you can't do that.
It didn't look forward to me, which is why I wasn't a huge fan of the call either. And I think the other part of this, too, that they have to look at for the future, and this is what Ben also said, and I agree, is forward ought to be entirely relative to possession. Penn State never had possession in that instance.
Right. I mean, you're trying to stay from the Holy Roller play in the Chargers-Raiders game that Dave Kasper scored a touchdown on. That's what they're trying to avoid. This guy's just hustling the sideline, just hits the ball to keep it in play so his guy can recover it. I thought that if they were going to say you can't do it, that Michigan would have had the ball at the spot of the bat. Not a 10-yard penalty from the line of scrimmage.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Are you kidding me? You're rewarding that?
And a fresh set of downs because they've first thought it was going to be...
down.
Right. So
it was first down. It was a 10-yard penalty for the Lorraine Skirt. It was first down. Like, wow. That's just... And you could talk about it on a day like this because Penn State won the game, so it's irrelevant to how the game turned out. I'm talking about just the novelty of it. I mean, just complete novelty of it.
Yeah, somewhat of a bad call, but the rule definitely needs to be changed.
By the way, Michigan is right now shut down operations because of COVID testing, which brings up something interesting. What if Michigan can't play next week? I'm talking about not this week. I mean next week against Ohio State. Guess who falls below the threshold of number of games played? Ohio State.
Well, it may happen this week, too.
Who's Ohio State playing this week?
Don't they have Michigan State this week?
Yeah.
Yeah, Dan Patrick had said earlier today, and I have the audio here that...
I don't care about his audio.
they have their own problem. The Ohio State still has some positives, and they're desperate to try to get the game in so they don't fall.
They'll play.
Yeah.
Oh, no, they'll play. They'll play. I was really surprised they didn't play on... Saturday against Illinois. I was really surprised. But the problem is not that Ohio State playing, okay? The question is going to be whether Michigan can play. See, it's just not one way or the other. What if the other team can't play? What if Michigan can't play the game? Then they fall below the threshold to play in the Big Ten championship game. Ooh. Then you got Northwestern against Indiana. Fox is busting its buttons over that one. All right, so. All right. Yeah, the question was going to, because Larry Johnson was going to be the coach on Saturday. LJ was going to be the coach on Saturday with Ryan Day being out. But the question is not going to be whether, I think they'll play Michigan State. It's just a guess from the outside looking in. The question is whether Michigan's going to be able to play on the 12th. And part of this is also, if it's a player, they have to be out 21 days. Who knows who it is? That's why somebody said, hey, you must be excited about this week. You got a couple basketball games and a football game. I looked at him. I said, no, you don't get it. Like, every game, I sit there every game, and I look around and go, well, I hope they can play this week. I mean, this isn't a year ago. Hey, you got basketball on Wednesday. You got football on Saturday. You got basketball on Sunday. I'm planning on it, but I'm just waiting like everybody else. Like, can you negotiate how many days to get to it and then play it? So it's kind of hard to get excited about things when you're like constantly circling the airport hoping they let the plane land. All right, we'll come back with more in a moment. Brought to you by Purdy Insurance here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Second and one at the 6 of Michigan. Near hash, attacking the end zone to our right. It's going to be Lee. Right side, walks into the end zone. Touchdown, Penn State.
Dotson and Washington to the far side with Parker in the slot. Holmes after that run. It's going to be a quarterback run by Clifford to the 25, 20, 15, near corner to the 10, 5. Touchdown, Penn State. Stout takes it. Down the far side, he kicks it, Samer still fumbles the ball, and Penn State is all over at the 25-yard line. The Nittany Lions recover, Chris, but there, I think it's, is it Chris Stahl or Drew Hartlaw, but Penn State's got it as Samer still made a major mistake, and Penn State has it at the 27-yard line. So, 22-yard attempt, far hash, Chris Stahl will snap it, and Jordan Stout will put it down for Jake Pinniger. Waits on the money, kick is up, and the kick by Jake Pinniger is good, and Penn State gets the takeaway on the recovery by Drew Hartlob, and they turn it into a two-score lead, 17-7 Nittany Lions. 33-yard attempt, Jordan Stapp puts it down. Put down. Kick by Jake Pinniger is up, and the line drive by Pinniger is good, and Penn State's back to a two-score advantage, 20-10 with 40 seconds to go in the third quarter. Lee and George near side. Levis is the quarterback. Motion by Johnson away from us. Sets up right side. Levis, he's got it. Bounces to his right. Dives into the end zone. Touchdown, Penn State. What a terrific drive in the clutch by the Nittany Lions, going 75 yards in 12 plays. The Nittany Lions walk into Ann Arbor and beat Michigan for the second consecutive year, 27-17. And Penn State's first win in Ann Arbor since 2009.
That's three of the last four over Michigan, and yeah, I was a witness to the 2009 game. There's some similarities, too, which has been happening the last couple of years. Penn State is the ability for Penn State to use its slot receiver. Graham Zug in 2009, Deshaun Hamilton, K.J. Hamler, and now Parker Washington. They exploit that slot against Michigan so often. Why? I don't know. I'm not going to sit here and tell you I'm smart enough to know why.
All right. Jim Roth, Southern Columbia, next half hour, another state title. Matt was all excited about it.
I was. It's awesome. It was historic.
I mean, you texted me 22 times. Did it bother you I didn't respond?
Hi, this is Season from Purdy Insurance. During this time, we are operating under the guidance of the PA Insurance Department. Most of our staff continues to work from home to practice social distancing for the safety of our staff and clients. Our office remains open and available to service our current and new clients by phone, by calling 570-286-5855, email, and by appointment. Our after-hours emergency service is also ready to assist our clients with their needs. From the team at Purdy Insurance, stay safe, be well, be kind, and know that we remain dedicated to the highest levels of service to protect what matters most.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
All right, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Q, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. And today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Auto, home, life, business. All right. Bundles. They'll save you money however they can. And make sure you're fully insured. And believe me, when you work around the suit, insurance is important. Oh, just kidding. All at Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Tell me I'm wrong, Matt.
You would not be wrong.
Well, a guy that seems to be rarely wrong with anything that goes on around his football programs, Jim Roth. Congratulations, Jim, on another state championship. Appreciate the time you're giving us today.
Well, thank you, and thanks for having me on.
All right, let's start with this. Every team takes on its own personality. To me, there's very little carryover from team to team after doing this for 40 years. So what was the personality of this team that allowed them to succeed?
Well, I don't think they ever really stopped to think about the fact that we graduated five Division I players, which is unheard of for our program and a school our size in general. It was a career class, so to speak, and these guys were just a loose, almost fun-loving, you know. I don't think I had a team that had as much fun at practice. You know, you would have to calm them down at times, but it was a good thing. And even when we were getting ready for games, they would be very loose and kind of free spirit. You never felt that there was going to be a lot of anxiety or nervousness that would translate into a negative performance. And so I think just the character of a lot of these players, particularly the starters, the upperclassmen, juniors and seniors, not being fazed by the graduation losses and losing so many outstanding players, and not just the D1 kids are the real good players, but we lost eight starters on each side of the ball, and they just stepped in from day one and got after it, and they played loose and fast every game, and from the first to the last, and it was one of the more impressive state titles for that reason, just because of what we had to replace and you know, how these guys approached things and just picked it up after losing that kind of talent.
Years ago, I was talking with Russ Rose, the Penn State women's volleyball coach, and Russ has coached seven national championship teams, and at one point he had coached four in a row, including a team that had, for the most part, the same talent every year. And I said, what's important when you're in a run like that? And he said, convincing each team that they are an entity unto themselves. How do you convince your teams year in and year out, Jim, that they are an entity unto themselves and not a carryover from the previous year?
That's a good question. I mean, I think we put a lot of emphasis on, and it's a cliche, but the here and now, or what's important today, and not looking ahead. But realistically, that's what we do. And then on top of it, my staff does a great job I reflect back to last year and the year before that when we had such a talented team with these Division I players, and everybody in the region expected us to win a title. So there was no margin for error. You had to win every game or it was going to be a failure type of thing. But we coach these guys. That's our goal, is to coach them like we're still trying to prove something. Like we're still trying to prove that we're a good football team, that we can win a state championship, and never look back on the previous season and just look forward. And I think, and that's what we've tried to do, and it's been successful for the most part, in that we've been able to get these guys each year to look at themselves as a separate team, and it didn't matter what happened the previous year or how many starters returned. And again, they seem to go out, they seem to respond to that type of coaching and go out every week, play hard, play fast, like they were trying to prove themselves, even though they had come off one or two consecutive state titles, whatever the case might be.
Which brings me to the next one. Obviously, in doing what I do, I'm around a program that in that particular week is the biggest game on the schedule for somebody. I don't care if it's a tough season like this one. You don't think the Penn State-Indiana game was the biggest game on Indiana's schedule? So you're the biggest game on everybody's schedule, no matter what. What does it take for your players to realize that they are the biggest game on that team's schedule for that season, and then to play through it?
Yeah, that's a good point. We try to impress that upon them. We've been successful in not having letdowns, not playing down to the level of an opponent. And, you know, that's kind of the mindset. I would have to say the last 4 years, probably the thing I'm most proud of is the consistency that we played with, whether it was one of the top teams on our schedule or in the state playoffs or even the state championship game, or a team that was really struggling. There were times in the past that we had teams in our program that would play down to the level of their competition somewhat. And I hope and I think that we kind of learned as a coaching staff how to try to prevent that from happening. And again, I think it's really on focusing on what we need to do each day and each week. For example, if we're playing a team that's struggling, and even if we're going to get their best shot, our kids know, you know, we probably have such a significant advantage it won't matter how hard they play. But in those weeks, for example, we're going to look at certain things that we're not doing as well as we feel we could be doing, and we're going to emphasize little things that we haven't done properly the previous week or previous weeks. And so we sometimes take the focus away from the opponent and put it on just what we need to do to get better as a football team. And again, we impress upon them that they're going to get their best shot from each team week in and week out, and I think they've learned that over time. And they bought into the fact that we can't let down against anybody, and we have to play at a high level week in and week out. And as I said, I think that's the thing I reflect on that I'm probably the proudest about over the last 4 year run, is the fact that I don't really recall a game where we just went out and just didn't play well. I mean, some games, obviously, we played better than others, but we played at a high level, and there was never really a letdown, any kind of consistent letdown for a week or 2 weeks or whatever the case might be.
All right, so here's the next part. You talked about the great talent that you ended up graduating and that this team was able to fill those gaps and win another state championship. What have the scores of the games in previous years meant to allowing you to play some people to get a realistic game evaluation to help you in player development down the road?
Well, we've won by a lot of big scores last year, I think. And I don't, again, I'm not one that I don't look at the stats and the numbers and so forth, but I hear them from time to time. That's not where my focus is, but I think, I know last year every game was a mercy rule, and I think the year before every game may have been a mercy rule. So, you know, again, the best teams that we played three undefeated teams late in the season last year in mercy rule them. Well, actually, more than that, we included the state playoffs. And so, you know, for our starters and those guys that were going to be finishing out that particular year, it was just a matter of staying on course. For the underclassmen, that's the other thing, and that's the other thing that led into us being able to do what we did this year. Because of how successful we were, even though we had to replace eight starters on each side of the ball, those new starters, those new guys, saw a lot of playing time. And they also saw a lot of playing time while the other teams still had their first units in, and the other teams were giving us their best shot. So even though they're considered first-year starters, because they were, they had a lot of very, very good game experience, and that translated into them being able to step onto the field this year, and it really wasn't an adjustment because they were accustomed to playing at a high level just because of all the time they got in the last couple of years due to the big scores.
That's exactly what I'm talking about. That's so important because now you get practical application as to what you're doing right, wrong, and it helps in player development. What about the pride of the area? To see your program do this, what do you think it does for the Valley? What do you think it does for the reputation of the Valley that this kind of success can happen here?
Well, I think, yeah, the area has had a lot over the years. If you go back to the 90s, you had Berwick, you had Mount Carmel, and then ourselves. And, you know, we've been able to keep it going. So we've had a number of dominant programs. Mount Carmel has the most wins in the history of Pennsylvania high school football. And, of course, Berwick with George Curry, legendary coach program.
I knew George. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so there's always been a lot of that here, and you know, that's something that we feel proud about, the fact that, you know, obviously for our district and for our school, but also for the area, to maintain such a winning tradition in the area. And and that's the other thing, you know, when you talk about pride and attitude and how do you keep it going, well, our kids pretty much expect to win. Now, we got to make sure that they're ready to back that up every week. But unlike the teams that we're playing a lot of times, we always talk about, you know, no matter how good a team is that we play or what kind of season they're having, if they're having a lot of success, we always talk about in the back of those kids' minds, they probably, you know, think that it's going to be difficult to beat us. Because of this run we've been on, and our goal when we go into a game is to try to bring that doubt out and take some of that mental toughness or that aggressiveness away from the other team, because there probably is some doubt down inside, right, because of the success,
sure,
we've been having, and we're just, you know, trying to use that, you know, to our advantage mentally. And but yeah, it's been you know, it's been a tremendous thing for ourselves in the area, and I like to think that, you know, we've kind of helped you know, the teams in our league made a little more noise this year in the state playoffs than they have been. Mm-hmm. And I think that anytime you get I know when Berwick was real good, when Mount Carmel was real good, when I look back into the past, I know that certainly helped us. I mean, that raised our level and what we had to work for, and I think we're doing that for other programs now. And the one other thing about the program that I might add, and this a lot of people would not realize this, but there are a lot of programs and a lot of schools that don't necessarily look to play as much football as they can play. For example, we're a smaller school. We play a junior high schedule, 7th and 8th grade. Mm-hmm. We play a freshman schedule, and we always attempt to play a full JV schedule and a varsity schedule. So I know that we play more games than most of the teams in the area, And that's an emphasis for us. And sometimes we don't have great records in junior high, but our goal is to get our kids as much experience and playing time before they hit the varsity level. And a lot of programs just don't. I don't know what they're looking at, but they don't see the need to do that. And I always say, this isn't like basketball or baseball or some of the other sports that you can really play in the off season. Football, you can only play in season. Our goal is to play as many minutes as we can with our kids from seventh grade on.
I've said that a million times. You can't get better unless you play. Final question for you. Win number 456, it goes past George Curry. It was historic, obviously. Have you had a chance to even allow yourself to reflect on all of this? I mean, we've talked a lot of philosophical questions here, as to, you know, because I want people to hear from somebody who wins how they go about winning. That's why I've asked the questions I've asked. But have you had a chance to reflect personally on what the milestone means, about what this run has meant?
No. So when this record came about here the last couple weeks, as it was approaching and so forth, you know, my response to almost everyone in the media was that it really hasn't sunk in. And being in a run for a state championship and preparing for games, it really hasn't. Not the type of person that looks at the individual stuff to begin with, so that even kind of pushes it farther away from reality for me. I knew George, and I got to know George better as time went on, and got to know him real well after he got out of coaching the first time and started doing media work and covering games and so forth. We spent a lot of time in conversation then, and just what he did for football in the region and in the state, for high school football in general, just to be in the same category, aside from the wins and who has the most or any of that, to be in the same category or be talked about in the same breath as someone like him is an honor. It's humbling. The whole record thing is humbling. And like I've told everyone, I look at it more as, you know, a reflection on our program. As you would know, there's so many moving parts in football. It takes so many people to be dedicated and involved in a program to have the kind of success that we've had and win that many football games over 35-plus years. And so I look at, you know, they tag me with the wins or whatever, but, you know, I have assistant coaches that have been with me since the first year, the entire 37 years. I have coaches that have been with me over 25 years. The community, the type of kids that we work with, because quite honestly, in this day and age, with the nature of just the way things are in society, sometimes it's hard to consistently get kids that have a good background in terms of work ethic and discipline and things like that. And of course, we try to instill that in the program. But you know, the more the parents do, the easier it is for us. But community in general has been, you know, a real plus. So there's a lot of things that could be talked about that contributed to it. But, you know, it's one of those things that's probably going to take a while to really sink in for me to realize what has been accomplished, you know, by the program over this stretch.
Well, I know we put your name at the front of it. I know you'd be the first to credit all your assistant coaches, all your players, your athletic department, everybody, and so forth. But from us to you, congratulations on a series of great accomplishments to you, Southern Columbia, the program, and on getting an incredible mark like that. Well-deserved, and that's what work ethic does. Congratulations.
Well, thank you very much, and I'm honored to be on talking to you because that voice is like I'm listening to a Penn State football game, which, you know, that's at a whole other level. But it's just an honor to be on the program and be recognized.
Well, we appreciate you very much, Jim. Congratulations on everything you've accomplished. It really is well-deserved, and I know you'd be the first to give everybody else credit. So thank you so much.
Yep, thank you.
Jim Roth, head football coach, Southern Columbia. All right. In the next half hour, we're going to go back to Penn State football with Mark Wogenridge. Then we'll get to Jerry Dulac in the final half hour. Later in the week, we will have on Frank Bodanna, York Daily Record. He'll be on tomorrow. And also, Chuck Greenberg, owner of the State College Spikes, managing general partner of the Spikes, will be on Wednesday's show to talk about this new MLB draft league that Williamsport will be a part of. So we got a lot going on this week. Great to have you with us. Marco Wogenrich, SI.com, next half hour. And then Jerry Dulac, Post-Gazette, Steelers Network, final half hour. All brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to PurdyInsurance.com on News Radio 1070 WKOK.